You're listening to episode 262 of Lifestyle Locker Radio with Jonathan Trone. Hi, I'm Dr. Josh Hand, and welcome to Lifestyle Locker Radio, where we help you create an awesome life and lifestyle. From nutrition to fitness, mindfulness to peak performance, and relationships to money mindset, we bring you on an amazing journey to help you unleash your human potential. Hey, it's Dr. Josh Hant here, and we need to talk about your health, your fitness, and your lifestyle. I know you, if you're like me, you've seen sickness and disease and even death in your life. And we know the leading causes of death in the United States are cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. Many of these conditions and diseases are considered lifestyle-based. And I know that lifestyles in the United States and other countries are not where they should be. We also know that they make you more vulnerable to other sicknesses and conditions. We tend to get our advice and recommendations on health from commercials and marketing, from fast food to pharmaceuticals, and not from experts with real-world experience. Unfortunately, we follow people or products who don't walk the walk or talk the talk. They simply just don't care about your health. It's just about their bottom line. I know we've heard it from our friends and from even our own self-talk that we don't have enough time, we can't make the changes, or there's just too much to do to be healthy. But there is a way to actually take control of your lifestyle and have the accountability and the support you need. We can be bigger than our excuses. For the past 14 years as a chiropractor, I've worked and continue to work with thousands of patients with their lifestyle and ultimately their health. I am now bringing the same philosophy to the online space where we can work as a group to get better, stronger, healthier, and be bigger than our excuses every single day. I've created the 3065 Lifestyle Shift Program to be an online-based, training-based program where you get to learn and be engaged with others in your journey towards a healthy lifestyle and ultimately a healthier life. To be part of this amazing movement, it's just $5 a month. Yes, it's only $5 a month, and that seems too good to be true. Well, it's not. So for the price of a gourmet coffee, you will have access to an amazing program and amazing people that want the best for you too. So when you dive into the content below this video to learn about our lifestyle philosophy, you'll see that we are incredibly unique. No other online program focuses on lifestyle the way we do and delivers the quality and the quantity of content that we do for just $5 a month. And it's not just about the movement. There's a lot more. It's really about your health. So check out the details and other videos below. And when you sign up, I'll even send you the ebook, Inside the Locker, which dives deeper into creating an awesome lifestyle. I look forward to seeing you on the inside of the Lifestyle Locker 3065 Lifestyle Shift Program. Hey everyone, welcome back to Lifestyle Locker Radio. We're bringing in another amazing guest today. We have Jonathan Trone, who is the creator of the Self-Love Revolution. How could you not love a program or love a company that talks about self-love? So Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, when I start to get emails and learn a little bit about you, I'm like, just the name. I was like, okay, I have to learn more. I didn't know who you were, what you did. And I'm like, great, Self-Love Revolution. That resonates very deeply with me. And I'm sure with most human beings, if they really, you know, sit down and think about it. So give us your story. Like, where did this come from? How come you're the self-love revolution guy?
Well, I guess the revolution side comes from in my old life, I was a raging punk rocker. That was the life I lived. So, you know, there's still a little rebellion that's left in me. It's just rebellion in a different form. And here's, it was a journey to get there. Look, I spent 20 years in the entertainment business, mostly the music side of it, but then I also did produce a bunch of television shows for a bunch of years. And, you know, I followed that philosophy of create the life you want and work hard and then you'll be happy. And I did, I created the life I wanted. You know, I love music and I didn't want to pay for all the concerts I wanted to go see, to be honest with you. I wanted to go to a lot of concerts and I wanted to interview bands. So I created a company which broadcast concerts and I interviewed the bands before the concerts. You know, it was one of the top music sites on the internet back when we started, when the internet was flourishing in the late 90s. You know, we started live broadcasting in 96. We started as a company in 95. You know, so there I am. I'm interviewing the biggest stars in the world. Even when I then went into TV, I was still working mostly the celebrity side of the world. And, you know, as time went on, I was living in LA, but I'm a beach guy. So I wanted to get closer to the beach. So slowly I moved closer to the beach. You know, I could see the sun set. I was on Third Street. I could see the sun set out my window. I was literally living the life of my dreams. This is what I had dreamt about, except I wasn't happy. And I'm going, okay, what the heck is wrong with me? I'm supposed to be happy now. You know, and people I knew would have thought I was happy. I didn't come across as not happy. And of course, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. Yes, I did love a lot of concerts and I love talking to people. So I did love interviewing bands as I still love, you know, talk to people all day long. I love getting people's stories, just like you are right now. But what I learned later on, I quit the entertainment business. By the way, not knowing what the heck I was going to do with the rest of my life, because I stayed on for a lot longer than I probably should have, because it was the whole "what else am I going to do" thing, right? We all stay in these jobs, these careers. I don't know how to do anything else. All my friends were doing that. That's what I did my whole entire life since I was 17 years old. It's all I knew, but I knew I couldn't do it anymore. And I went on a year search. Now I was lucky. I happened to have sold, you know, some assets of a company I had some money in the bank. So I get that not everyone has the luxury. I did. And I spent a year trying to figure out what was wrong with me and what I was going to do for the rest of my life. And when I finally realized what was wrong with me, what I discovered was there was nothing wrong with me. I'm like, what? There's nothing wrong with me. I don't need to pretend that I'm that person over there, because no matter what, how great a day I had, it didn't matter who I interviewed. At the end of the day, I'd look myself in the mirror and I'd go, oh, you're not good enough. Other people are doing better than you. You know, you're not Oprah. You don't have the daytime talk show yet. Who are you? You got, you know, so I was always in this comparison mode. Comparison, one of the 13 saboteurs, a killer of joy. So I was in nonstop comparison mode. I was my own worst enemy. I didn't know it at the time. This is only looking back. I was my own worst enemy. So the self-love revolution, getting it back to that, the self-love revolution, well, because what I discovered was I wasn't alone. I wasn't the only one having this self-talk. I truly thought I was the only one talking to myself. Me and the crazy people on the street that said, oh, they're just crazy. Well, I'm not crazy because I'm not doing it out loud, but everyone else isn't talking to themselves because, I don't know, in somewhere about second, third, or fourth grade, you know, before then it was cute when kids would talk to themselves. Oh, it's so cute. Look, they can talk. And then at some age you go, you can't talk to yourself. So there I am talking to myself. So I discovered I was my own worst enemy. The self-love revolution is about becoming your own best friend. That's what it is. And it's more than a business, although, yes, it is. I like to think of it as a movement. It's a movement to rebel against how our culture wants you to be, which is to really think you're not good enough. Because if you think you're not good enough, you are more likely to buy stuff. so that you will think, you will feel for a moment you're good enough, right? That's what the car commercials are, the phone commercials are. They're all, look at this. If you get this, you'll feel better. Go on this vacation. I love vacations, but go on this vacation and then you'll feel better. You can be like all those other people. No, stop trying to be like the other people. Stop trying to be like the other successful people. Because look, I spent 20 years in Hollywood. I know a lot of successful people, millionaires. Multimillionaire, everything. I know rich people, poor people, happy people, sad people. Money has nothing to do with it. And I guarantee you what you see on the outside is not what's happening on the inside. And that's what the self-love revolution is. We have to begin to be our own best friends and stop relying on outer changes to give us our internal joy.
Yeah. So let me go back in time for a second. So you said you had that year, like that year of you figuring you out, like what was this, what's going on? Who am I? Why am I this way? What's going on? These questions you were asking. So this is two parts. So what questions, like there had to be some real specific questions you were probably asking yourself in that time frame, probably on a very regular basis, is the first question. Two, was there any resources you were using? Like, oh, I read this book or I listened to this audio or I did this meditation or I did something that maybe helped me get to where we are today.
Yeah. So first I want to be clear. So that was the year of the beginning, I would say.
Okay.
But it took really some time for me because I didn't get introduced to what self-love was actually until I'd have to really go and look at the calendar, but maybe 2 or 3 years after that year.
Okay.
So there was a process before I really discovered self-love, but I want to answer your question because there was different evolutions. One is I had already started practicing yoga, and this was based on a surgery some years ago that had gone bad. I think I died on the table. It was really bad. I went for a year of physical therapy. They kicked me out of physical therapy. Insurance kicked me off of it, even though I wasn't done. And they said, you know, go try yoga. Maybe that will help you. And, you know, here I am, raging punk rocker. I'm like, yoga, what is that? But thank God they did change my life. I'm here in Austin, Texas. Now I own a yoga studio.
Yeah.
That kid that was told to go to a yoga class, he wouldn't even believe what was going on today. So yoga did really open up a part of my brain that said, you can live differently. And then it was interesting. So a buddy of mine, he was visiting me from Denmark, and this was back when we had iPods and all of that. So he gave me Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth, but on audio disc. And you know, so we put it on my iPod. Sorry, Eckhart. Yes, it's true. I stole it. It was stolen. You know, you're not allowed to take music from people, but believe me, it's gone back to you. I promise you. But here's what happened. So I just put it on my iPod because he put it there. Right. And I'm like, whatever. So, and in those days I didn't do well with silence because my mind was always going and it wasn't good stories it was creating. So, you know, I'd be listening to my punk rock and be the Ramones and Clash and Social Distortion and Green Day, whatever. And then every so often there'd be like a 5-minute Eckhart Tolle thing. And I'd pause and I'd listen to it. And then I'd go on and on. And then I'd pause, I'd listen to it. And this went on for months and months. And all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, I began to understand it in these 5-minute bursts. And it was really, really powerful. And he spoke about the pain body, right? And I'm like, oh, I got a pain body. You mean I'm just addicted? This is just an addiction I'm having. So I got to treat it differently and not try to hide from it and try to be with it. So I'd say that was the first one. You know, another big Bible of mine is Thich Nhat Hanh, Pieces Every Step. Really powerful. And you know, and I learned from Tony Robbins and Bob Proctor and all these amazing teachers. But this is when it really turned around. So I told you it took a few years. So I had all these great teachers, Eckhart Tolle, Tony Robbins, Bob Proctor, like I said, Thich Nhat Hanh,
yoga.
Don Miguel Ruiz, right? The Four Agreements, yoga, right?
Yeah.
So all these amazing teachers. So fast forward a few years. So here I am in Austin, Texas, and I come across Louise Hay. And, you know, it's not like I was asking the questions, like, you know, you said what questions did I ask. I didn't know necessarily even know the right questions to ask.
You were searching for him, but you didn't know you were searching for him.
For me, although I started teaching yoga and I got trained to be a life coach. So I knew how to ask questions, but I wasn't always asking them of myself, to be honest with you. Because apparently something inside was still afraid. I didn't know it. I thought I was doing it. And my clients were getting a lot of success. And I had, you know, decent success. Things were going much better. But here's what happened. So I listened to Louise Hay or I watched the Louise Hay thing. Of course, you know, she's been around for decades. I just didn't know her. And she says, go to a mirror and look in the mirror and say, look at yourself and say, I love you. So I go, oh, that sounds pretty cool. And now I've done the work and I've learned the confidence skills. I've learned the goal setting skill. I learned how to do all this stuff. So I felt good about my journey. I was, you know, I was the real shy guy. And now I'm a little more confident. So I go to the mirror, didn't wear glasses then. I go to the mirror and I go, Jonathan, it's an exact quote. I promise you.
Exact quote. Love it.
That was an exact quote. I couldn't look myself in the eyes. You know, for some of you might be listening, some watching. I turned my head as I said that. I could not look myself in the eyes and I couldn't say the words. And I curled up into a ball of these sensations, which I had never experienced before. I'm like, what the F just happened? That's when I knew something really different was going on. It wasn't just about the Tony Robbins confidence. I'm a fan of Tony Robbins. I've learned a lot from him. I use his techniques. You know, I'm not putting anyone down. But it wasn't just about law of attraction, saying these affirmations and things like that. It doesn't work for a lot of people. There are reasons it doesn't work. So at that point, I knew I had to go deeper and figure this out. If you would have asked me the day before, I would have said, yeah, of course I love myself. That was the moment I realized I didn't love myself and I had to do something about it.
That would be a good thing for everybody listening or watching to do, you know, pause and go do that. If you're driving, don't do this in the car, please. Like start staring at your mirror, but seriously, take a breath, take a pause and do it. That'd be the first action step for this call. See if that's something you can do.
Yeah. And if you can't, it's okay. It's really okay. I couldn't. I'm at the point now where I can look at any mirror. It's a new habit, right? Your life is just a series of habits. If you don't think you have habits, you are wrong. You do. You just might not know what they are. So I had an old habit. I would look in the mirror and I'd pick all the pieces of my face that I didn't like, you know, and the new blemish, see there, that's a new blemish, right? And the new grays or wrinkles, whatever it is you don't like about yourself. So that's what I would do. I'd pick myself apart. Now I look in any mirror. I'm in the airport and I go to the bathroom. I see the mirror, I go, hey, Jonathan, I love you. You're awesome. And you're looking great. This is how I treat myself now. I'm my own best friend. I turned my life around from being my own worst enemy to my own best friend. And I want to be really clear. It doesn't mean you don't have bad days. Got them all the time. They just don't bother me so much anymore. I'm just like, bad day. If my friend had a bad day, what would I do? I'd say, oh, it's okay. I got your back. No worries. Let's just be together. And we know it will pass because they always do. So that's what I just do to me. I go, oh, Jonathan, it's a bad day. It's okay. No worries. Let's just be here together. You know, there are all these me's inside my head. Now we're just here together. No problem. And then it passes. And the good, the joy, which is already here inside of me. I don't need it from out there, although I'll take it, you know, but it's all in here. It gives it space to rise up. And you got to know. So if you go and try this, like Joshua said, if you go and try this, you got to know self-love is a practice. It's a skill. It's a skill, which means you can practice it. So it's a skill and a practice. And the more you practice it, just like playing the piano, the more you practice it, the better you get at it. That's why now I can look in any mirror. I can close my eyes. I can say wonderful things to myself all the time because I've been practicing it for a bunch of years now.
Yeah. So self-talk, I mean, that's what's coming down to. I mean, you have the visual aspect with being okay with looking at yourself and saying that, but I mean, just the self-talk alone. I mean, just I'm thinking of like how many times, like you talk about comparing yourself and you're calling it your first life, right? Comparing yourself to everybody's success and going like, I'm not successful enough. Even though you have this cool production company, you're in band or like interviewing bands and all this cool stuff, but you're constantly looking going, well, she's better, he's better.
Yeah.
But, you know,
dude, I lived on Third Street, which when I moved there from 11th Street was really cool. But from Third Street to get to the beach, which I could have my feet in the sand in 10 minutes, like that's awesome life. But, you know, I had to walk by everyone on Second Street and everybody on Ocean and then everyone that has houses on the beach. That's 10 minutes of comparing myself to all these people. Mm-hmm. And I really believed it at the time. There was a while I believed it. When I have that house and I picture that one on the beach right there, with the pool and then the sand and then the ocean. I don't really know why you have to have a pool right next to the ocean.
Yeah,
okay. But
I, your feet I look, off.
Yeah, right. But part of me really thought, okay, when I get that, then I can be happy. And then I just woke up one day and said, whoa, it has nothing to do with where I'm living, what car I have, what relationship I'm in, what success I'm having, outward success, paper success, because on paper I was successful. None of this shit matters. Oh, sorry if I'm not supposed to swear here. None of this shit matters.
Yeah.
And I realized that it was up here. And it wasn't even so much changing it first, because that's what I learned. What I learned first was change it. Change your self-talk. And I did. And I could change it, but I'd always fall back. So I was going on these circles, 6 months of take massive action, right? Many of us have heard the phrase massive action, take massive action, get the change. I got the change. And then 6 months later, I'd fall back. Mm. Okay, well, I know this game, massive action. Now my thing wasn't weight, but it's no different than that kind of thing. And whether it's a yo-yo weight thing or the yo-yo mind thing.
Yeah.
So before you change your self-talk, you have to begin to accept yourself. Accept yourself just the way you are. Acceptance is the key to all of it. Once you practice acceptance, then you can begin to change. You know, I talk about it like the GPS of life. So, you know, we've all been in a state, you know, you put the address where you want to get to into your GPS. But your GPS doesn't know where you are because there's no signal, right? Have you ever been in that situation?
Yeah, of course.
Right? So it's like, so you have to start driving around to figure it out, and you're praying you get signal. And then it figures out where it is. And then you can start going, right? That's the acceptance part. First, you have to know where you are fully. You have to feel it. It doesn't have to feel good, but you have to learn how to feel. I talk to so many people that say they don't know how to feel. And I'm not blaming them, not their fault. It's what you were taught. We were taught, don't be sad, don't be angry, don't be afraid. And they're still teaching this crap, still teaching it. Even, you know, in schools, they teach it. And subliminally in the TV shows we watch, you know, someone crying, oh, I'm sorry, I'm crying. Why the hell are you sorry you're crying? It's a beautiful thing to cry, and it's a beautiful thing to witness someone who is crying. Like, that's emotion pouring out that you've been given a gift to witness. But we're taught not to feel these things. So then you wonder why people don't feel, or they try to escape it. Oh, I'm feeling this. I don't like it. That must mean I'm supposed to have a drink. Because on TV, when they're not feeling well, what do? They go and have a drink. And I mean, that's what I was brought up with, friends and all that kind of stuff. But I see today's shows too.
No different.
Let's go to the bar and drink this one off. And I'm not anti-alcohol. I drink, but not to drink it off. Not to not feel. That's the biggest problem we have, is not feeling. So acceptance first. And acceptance does not mean accept the story, this is happening. It's accepting, what am I feeling right now? In my chest, in my stomach, in my throat, my head, wherever it is. And once you really can accept it, then then yeah, change it, make it better. Do what's going to be best for you. Absolutely. Begin to change your self-talk.
So Jonathan, I'm going to pause for a second because I'm talking to you right now. You got your glasses on, your button-down shirt. And I'm thinking, I know me in the 90s, late 90s, I had a mohawk, shaved head, would wear like, I hate the term, but I call it like the wife beater, like that tank top, that rib tank top, that white tank top with cut off camo jean shorts, going to the first Warp Tour ever type of thing. And I'm thinking, was I hanging out with this guy at some point?
You and I were probably at the same show.
So I'm like, oh my God, this is
no, funny. No doubt.
Yeah. And people look at you go, wait, you had a mohawk? You had your tongue pierced? You had what? Really?
Yeah. Now I never had the mohawk. I had the long hair down to my shoulders. I got a picture of me and Joe Ramone. And yes, he's twice the size of me, but there we are with our long hair. Yeah. And yeah, we were probably at the Warped Tour together, man.
That's too funny.
But honestly, even that, and look, I had some great times, but music was a drug to me. Music was a refuge to me. Music was an escape to me. And I treat music differently now. The truth is there are some songs which a part of me still loves that I don't understand anymore because I don't really want to bomb the world anymore. You know, I don't want to destroy everybody around me anymore. And I'm not blaming everybody else anymore for my problems. Now that music saved me for a long period of time. And I still listen to it. I still put on the Ramones, still put on Social Distortion. I still listen to it. And I love the music. Some of it I don't get anymore, or I kind of remember the guy that did get it. But I do know that it was a refuge for me because the music was so loud that I couldn't hear the voices in my head. And that's what I needed at the time. Or that's what I thought I needed. Yeah. I needed to figure out how to deal with them. My refuge was music, but it's not, even as I say it, love music, love bands, and I love seeing shows. But if it's an escape so that you're not feeling, which is why, I mean, I lived my life in concert halls and bars for many years. It's no better than you know, shopping, gambling, all the other kind of stuff, TV that we do to escape. We have to learn to feel. I remember when I was in high school, I have a ringing in my ears. I've had it for decades. I put my music on. I came home alone. You know, my parents were divorced. My mother, you know, wasn't home. She was working. So I came home. I was alone. I just blasted my music. Just me, my records. So the world got shut out. Self-love is not about shutting out the world. It's about inviting it all in. Everything that's going on in here, everything that's going on here, everything that's going on here, as well as everything that's going on out there, and learning how to invite it in, not trying to avoid the world anymore, but embracing it and embracing you within the world.
Yeah, I think that, and it's such a neat concept. It's truth. You know, I see this in my practice. I know you see with the people you work with. I mean, it's whether you said, I love to use the examples, you know, with some people it's gambling, some people it's sex, some people it's whatever that thing is that they're using to escape. And that's where, you know, I have this conversation with some of my patients from time to time. They say, oh, I'm going on a vacation. And I go, what are you vacating?
Yeah.
You know? Like the Europeans have it great when they travel, they're going on holiday, they're celebrating life. And I think, you know, we all try to vacate ourselves with whatever the thing is. Yours happened to be music, but it's powerful just to be able to recognize. And I think all of us could take a step back and go, maybe, do I have a thing? What am I vacating? What am I running from?
Yeah.
And it's a big question to ask yourself, even when you're looking in the mirror, maybe at the same time.
Well, that running from it, that's a big thing. I mean, because there's more to the backstory. And so I'll give a little piece of it. So I first moved to Denmark from Boston. I moved to Denmark. I was there about 6 months. And now they've done research on this. And even Eckhart Tolle talks about this. The brain can only have, it has kind of its 100% capacity, and it's always taking in new stuff. When you're in a new place, it's occupied with taking in new information, new things. So that means the old things that are there, those stories, they go away. When all the new things become regular again, the stories can come back. That's why vacations are so good for people, or holidays, but they are vacating because everything's new. The stories are gone. So went to Denmark, stayed there 6 months. Stories start coming back. Now they kicked me out of Denmark for being an illegal immigrant, but that's another story. It did happen about that 6 month mark. Moved down to Spain. I was in Spain. It was awesome for 6 months. Okay. Stories come back. Then I moved to LA. Moved to the middle of LA. I loved LA. It was awesome for about 6 months. Then it was like, okay, this kind of sucks. Okay, so eventually I work my way up and I create this company, and not my company that I shared, but with the concerts and interviews, gets taken over by another company. So now I'm successful. I got money coming in. Now I moved to Santa Monica, 11th Street. Awesome for about 6 months. Then the voices come back. I don't know this is going on. I just know that looking back, I can recognize it.
Yeah.
Recognize it. So then I get to 3rd Street. Okay. That's where we spoke about before. 3rd Street, amazing for 6 months. And then all the stories came back. And so here I was. It's Santa Monica, California. There's this park overlooking the ocean. It's called Palisades Park. I used to walk there all the time because the ocean was also an escape for me. I could look at the ocean, and you looked out. When you looked out at the ocean, the city didn't exist. All the problems that were in the city didn't exist. And at that time, again, I said I listened to music all the time. I don't really walk with headphones anymore, but back then I did. So I have my headphones in. I'm listening to a Social Distortion song that I had listened to thousands of times before. I had seen them live. I had interviewed the band. Like, so this was nothing new to me. And I heard these words like I never heard them before. The word said, you can run all your life, but not go anywhere. And I was like, holy shit. Is that me? Denmark, Spain, LA, Santa Monica, closer to the beach in Santa Monica. I'm running. See, when I moved to Denmark, I thought I was running towards something. Because I met people there. It was great. They had a great music scene, great music festival, the Roskilde Festival. Great jazz. They had one of the best jazz festivals in the world. I was running towards that. Then I went to Spain because they kicked me out of Denmark. And you know, in Denmark, the salaries are pretty good, and they didn't take taxes away because they didn't want to give me a work permit. So I'm like, all right, I got money. Let's move to Spain. But what I realized later was I was running from something, and the something was me. That was the only common denominator in all those places. I kept showing up. I couldn't run away from me. So then I just had to accept me. And at that point, it was kind of, I had to accept me. Now it's like, well, it's awesome being accepted because I was, you know, I was the loner and the outcast and the misfit and all that kind of stuff. And I sought acceptance from the outside. And while I hope at the end of this, you like me and we can, you know, rehash some old Warped Tour stories and totally. Stuff. At the end of the day, I accept myself. I can look in the mirror and go, Jonathan, I accept you just as you are. And I do this every single day. I do this, accept you just the way you are. Yeah, you screwed that up today. No worries. I got your back. Yeah, great day today. Oh, how awesome. Let's celebrate together. And it is a completely different way to live when you begin embracing yourself versus running from yourself. And most of us are running from ourselves.
Yeah.
To be clear, because we've been taught to. We've been taught we're not good enough.
Yeah. Programmed, right?
Programmed. Yeah. Yep.
So let's dive in. So this is an amazing story, and I love this. So with your work, with the self-love revolution, I mean, you have a podcast, you know, you have programs, people work with you individually. How does all of this work? Like, how do people say like, oh, I want to learn more. I got to find out some more. I like this conversation. How do they connect? How do they maybe dive a little deeper?
Yeah. So here's the thing. I did all this alone. I really did. Cause I didn't get it. I didn't know the tools. And as I said, I found all these things from different places. There was the Tony Robbins school of massive action. And then, you know, Bob Proctor and the Law of Attraction, which when you really dig into Bob Proctor, it goes so much deeper than that. Once I got beyond the surface, and then the Louise Hay stuff, but it was all in different places. And then the last element I figured out was this idea of forgiveness. I have a daily forgiveness practice. Daily. I call forgiveness the most important skill we were never taught. Totally transformed my life and even how I practice self-love. So what the self-love revolution is, I couldn't deal with all these things being in different places because I didn't know what to do. And I said, wait a minute. What if I figured out what I need from all of them and I put them together? And that's really what I did. And I didn't do it for you or for a program or for anything. I did it because I couldn't keep going over there and there and there and there. It's too chaotic for me. So I created a lifestyle for me, which includes how I wake up in the morning, how I live during the day, a life of honoring values, right? A life lived honoring your values is a fulfilling life. A life lived not honoring your values is an unfulfilling life. When I got trapped in the TV world, I started living other people's values, not mine. I didn't know it. I just was. That's what happened. So I put it all together for me. And then once I did it, I said, oh my God, this is it. Because massive action without self-love is not fun. Of course, just looking in the mirror and saying, I love you without taking action in moving forward and progressing in life. Well, that's not doing much either. So I put it together and created this self-love revolution for me. And then I really started sharing it at the yoga studio where I held these weekly, I called it life mastery coaching at the time, these life mastery coaching sessions. And there was one week I remember, and there were a lot of, it was in January, so a lot of new people had come. And about half the room said, I need to learn to like myself. I need to learn self-love or some variation of that. And that's when I said, oh, this isn't just for me. I guess I need to create a program for this and a movement. So that's what the Self-Love Revolution is. It's a movement. And you know, you want to join, go to selfloverevolution.com and click join the revolution. And yes, there's a masterclass immersion that goes with this that really goes into the details of this, how it works, why it works, the chemical experience of it. We are a chemical manufacturing machine. We just got to manufacture the right chemicals. Exactly. Complaints release certain chemicals. Gratitude release certain chemicals. You just get to choose which chemicals you want to release. So it really goes into the details, and you get to do it with a community of people. We are in this together. So that's the invitation. And if you're not ready for the community, I did it on my own. It's just going to take a lot longer. If you want to go the quicker path, join a community of people that are doing this. Join the conversation. Share your difficulties so we can coach you through them. And yes, there's group coaching that goes along with that. Yes, for some people, I still do the one-on-one coaching for very few people. But if that's something that you're looking for, we can talk about that. But you have to begin to change the way you show up in the world. Chances are, if you had a friend that spoke to you the way you speak to yourself, you would end the friendship. You are speaking to yourself. Many of us, we speak to ourselves in ways that we would not let anyone else speak to us. For the entrepreneurs in the room, we are our worst bosses. We would quit. If any boss spoke to us like this, we would quit. But we can't quit. What we can do is become our own best friends and our own best bosses. And that's the invitation that the self-love revolution, and it is a revolution. It's a rebellion. It's civil disobedience on a massive scale. That's the invitation I have for you.
That's awesome. So I don't want to quit here, but I want to, we had a pre-conversation before we were recording, and there were three topics that we spoke about, and I want to mention all three of them, but I feel like we can have like an hour long plus half a day conversation on each one of them.
On each one, yes.
On each one. So, and I know these are like things that I think are great to tackle. I know you want to tackle these things, not in a bad way, but we want to change them. And I'm just looking, there's three things. We're talking about like reducing depression. And God knows 2020, this went through the roof. Like if it wasn't bad enough already, it's now worse. We want to reduce suicides. And those also have skyrocketed this past year. School shootings, like all of these things, like they're becoming so, and I hate to say that they're becoming popular. Being more depressed, suicides, and school shootings, and even public shootings in general. Like these things are showing up more and more in our lives. And I know we have solutions. I know there's thoughts that, you know, pick one and let's just dive in, because I know there's going to be some overlap.
Well, and to me, they're all connected, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, we've spent a year of follow the science, right? But for some reason, and even with STEM is what's big right now, science, technology, engineering, and math. That's what we need to teach in schools. Except we are not teaching the science, or at least the whole science. Because what does science say? So the biggest predictor, according to science, according to research that they did at Harvard University, one of the pinnacles of education, the research they did says the number one predictor of future success is emotional intelligence. So what's emotional intelligence? It's understanding your emotions. Yes, the joy, the happiness, but also the sadness, the anger. Can you point to a single person on the planet that's never been sad, never been angry, never been afraid? Impossible. No, of course not.
Yeah.
So why would you say don't be those things? These are normal things. And we put so much anxiety on our students to achieve, but then we don't teach them how to deal with the feelings of anxiety in their body. Anxiety isn't bad. I'm even going so far as to say depression isn't bad. It's only when you don't know how to deal with the depression, with the anxiety, these things aren't negative in their self, in and of themselves. It's just we haven't been taught how to deal with them. So what have we done? Now, some schools, and I commend them, I want to be clear, commend them, are doing social emotional learning. And they're kind of these little side things to the main education curriculum. But what I want to ask is, why aren't you following the science? And why aren't you teaching this as science? It's not social emotional learning. It's science. It's the brain does this. The brain releases chemicals. When you feel this, it releases chemicals. When you stand up straight, it releases chemicals. Again, research done. When you're like this, chemicals are released from the pituitary gland. When you stand, just standing up like this, different chemicals are released. Yep. Never mind a back bend. You know, if you get into the yoga things like that, right? Back bends in yoga are a prescription for depression because of the chemicals released in the body. And I'm not against prescription drugs and things like that, but what I'm saying is you can create your own drugs too, and maybe one day get off of them. This needs to be taught as a science, brain science, and it shouldn't be off to the side. Look, the victims and the bullies, right? I was more the victim side, right? Then you have the bullies, which on the extreme might be the school shooters. We're going through the same problem, the I'm not good enough problem. So I wasn't good enough. I hid in the corner. I found solace in the, once I discovered the Ramones, I'm like, oh, there are misfits just like me. And I would see them. They came around every year. I saw them every year. And I was at the very last show they did, you know, I was there till the end of it. And then the other people are the people that then need to take power over other people. Okay, I'm not good enough. Well, I'm going to prove that I can demand attention. Okay, it comes out in different places, but it's the same problem. And if we simply teach people they are good enough, right? We also teach people, hey, see, look around the room. All these people, they're your competitors. Someone's going to be number one. Someone's valedictorian. They're number one. The rest of you, okay, maybe top 10%. You guys are okay. Then there's everybody else. No. Why don't we teach, instead of teaching competition, why don't we teach cooperation and connection? Why don't we get extra credit? When you're at the top, you get more points if you bring someone else up with you. You don't get more points by putting them down. The bell curve is the worst thing in the world. That demands that there are losers in the world. How about we're rewarded for bringing people up alongside of us? If we begin to teach these things in non-social emotional learning, although again, great start. Thank you for doing it. So grateful that it's there. But it's not enough. It's science. It should be in the science class. Just as important as programming the next, you know, the next massive multiplayer game. When we do that, then depression doesn't become the problem, suicides drop, and there are no more school shootings. I really believe this.
Yeah, and you know, just to go back to the posturing, you know, as someone that studies neurology, someone that studies physiology, the structure of the human body, I mean, just the physiology of fear and physiology of depression and physiology, and you're showing that rounding, that slumping. And when you have those physiologies, the answer is never medication, because the cause is not your feelings. It's the cause of the repetition of the feelings, because you start to create this physiological habit. And yes, that's why you talk about back bends and all of these other things. And that's why if you ever see anybody, and I don't think success when I say just people that have money, but when you see successful people like a Tony Robbins, who his life work is to empower people. I mean, like, that's what this guy loves to do. If you watch him on a stage, I've been to his live events. This guy stands up for 50 hours and like, he's just like a magnet of positive, like good juju energy, like just up and up. He's not like walking like, okay, we're going to be excited, you know, with this slouching posture. So physiology and your posture is a massive thing. And when we look at technology now, what do kids do all day, every day? They put themselves into the depressed physiology. And I see kids in my practice that are on anti-anxiety medications at 10 years old. I'm like, what does that even mean? Why? Like, we were creating this physiology, but also what it comes down to it is they're breaking down inside in so many different ways. And I'm going off topic for 1 second and I'll bring it right back in. I look at x-rays on almost every single person in my practice. And I'm getting, like, when I first started practice in 2006, if I saw arthritis in someone's neck or joint degeneration in someone's neck, I'd be like, whoa, that's good. You're kind of old. I get it. I wouldn't say that, but that's what you're taught. I'm seeing that phase 2 degeneration arthritis in 11-year-olds.
Yeah.
So what is their future going to bear?
We got to change it. And we can change it simply by teaching the science that we know. Science is important. Let's teach the science. Let's teach what's been researched and what we know works. Meditation has been proven to work. Meditate, they've done it in schools, 15 minutes a day of just quiet time. Grades go up, violence goes down. It's been proven. It's not a theory anymore. They tested it. Yeah. It's now science. All I got to do is implement the science and the world changes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, we just take action on the things we know work versus trying to avoid all the things that don't work. I think we live in an avoidance culture versus like a magnetic culture where you try to go towards things that are good. We try to just avoid all the things that are
It's deeper than that. And I know we're running out of time, but yes, it's totally that. And if you are happy, you are not going to buy as much stuff. We live in an avoidance society, mm-hmm. but we also live in a very commercial society. We are a commerce society, and I'm not against commerce. I own stuff. I could show the camera. I got stuff. Nothing wrong with having stuff that brings you joy, that makes life easier. But there is a segment of our culture that does not want you to change, because their bottom line is predicated on you not just not being happy, but you continuing the search for happiness. Not being happy. They don't want to make you happy. Right? America is not founded on happiness. It's life, liberty, and what? The pursuit of happiness, which, by the way, science has proven pursuing happiness makes you unhappy. It's the research. Pursuing happiness makes you unhappy. Stop pursuing it and exist now. But you have to understand the culture doesn't want you to change. That's why this is a rebellion. That's why this is civil disobedience. That's why this is the self-love revolution, because the culture does not want you to change. And that's why we have to do it for ourselves and for the next generation.
Awesome. Everyone, Jonathan Schroen, Self-Love Revolution. Let's finish on that high note. That was awesome, brother. I appreciate it. Everybody, make sure you check down in the show notes all the links. And lastly, I want to say this. He has a Fear Into a Friend cheat sheet that he's going to share with everybody. We're going to have a link down there for you to get so you can learn a little more. We've spoken about fear at the end here and that avoidance lifestyle, which we don't want. We need to accept who we are and move forward. So Jonathan, again, awesome. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much.